You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and to find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I am Charlene Schmidt. With me, as always, are my lovely co-hosts,
Tristan Riddell and
Lori Sears.
And this week, we are going to return to something we do on a rare occasion. We figured it was time, and we're going to do an episode commentary. We have picked the episode Collective, which, as you might remember, has the Borg babies. Yay!
Yeah.
Yeah, we picked this one because, I mean, it's always so easy to do a commentary for something that's either really, really good or really, really bad. And so we feel like not enough people do things like this. And so, like, this is not our favorite episode, but this is not our least favorite episode either.
Right.
And, yeah, so I feel like maybe this is a good choice for today's commentary.
Right. And I've got a little bit of a confession. I've not watched this episode in years. It's been years, because it flies under the radar. It's not that good, it's not that bad, but it doesn't ever cross my mind to think, gosh, I should watch Collective.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really has that gut reaction where you're like, you know what would be good right now, sweetheart? Collective.
Yeah, no. Never.
Not really.
So yeah, let's take this thing for a spin. Just like always with any commentary, what we're going to do is we're going to queue up our Netflix or our DVD, whatever it is you got on you. You're going to set it to the very beginning at zero, and we will count you down. We'll go 3, 2, 1, start, and you'll hit start when I say start.
And for those of you who are listening in your cars who can't actually queue this up, just to remind you what this episode is about, not just the Borg babies, but this is the introduction of Icheb and his crew and everything like that. It's where Chakotay, Kim, Neelix, and Paris are all on a shuttle mission, and then they get abducted by these pseudo-Borg. So for those of you who remember the episode, fantastic. For those of you who don't, save this episode until you can get back home.
Right, and then get up to speed, and then, yeah. Okay, so are we all ready to go? Everybody queued up?
Yep.
Okay, get your Netflix or whatever it is you have ready. We're counting down to 3, 2, 1, start. All right, and as you mentioned, we are starting out with a shuttle, which, boy, anytime we start out with a shuttle, I think it's going to crash.
Well, thankfully, the Delta Flyer has only been destroyed once. So,
right, yeah, and as we mentioned last week, we're not going to talk about that.
Aw, poker. That's hilarious. Teaching Neelix how to play poker.
Yeah, I love that they brought in the card game, because it always makes me think of TNG, so yeah. It was a little nostalgic to see him playing.
It's true. Yeah. Little taste of home, too.
I always feel like Chakotay gets more and more like Harry Kim's hair, the more and more he gets slick back and jet black.
Yeah.
You know, that is... Look. We just cut from Chakotay to Harry, and they do have the same hairstyle. You are right. Look
Seriously,
at that!
It's true. I never really thought about that before. And then if they shave the sides, they all of a sudden they'd be Miley Cyrus or Neelix. Either one. I can't. I don't know.
That is a Photoshop disaster just waiting to happen.
Oh, God. As long as
Get
they don't
on
start
that, Tumblr.
Twerking. That'd be fine.
Oh, no. We don't need to see that.
No.
Ugh.
I can't think of Harry as being a good poker player.
I can't either.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't either.
I love this moment just because, like, I always try to think, how would I react if just all of a sudden, Borg cube, you know?
Yeah, right there.
Tom's face.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're supposed to do something about this.
I I always wanted a little bit more of a punchy joke, because Tom says is like, oh man, and I had a full house too. I wanted him to say something as he was looking at the Borg cube, just like, well, that's disconcerting, you know.
Or he could have pulled a Data and said, oh shit.
That's right.
Well, this is network television, so.
Right. Well, and yeah, that would have just been my reaction. I'm projecting my own reaction onto Tom Paris.
You know, I found out the other day, I need to do some more reading about this, but okay, in network television, you know, the FCC rules, you know, if you swear on live TV, you'll get fined or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that on cable television, like basic Caleb television. I'm sorry. Just cable, not Caleb television. I don't know who Caleb is, but
you're thinking the episode Resistance? Is that it?
Yeah. on basic cable television, the FCC doesn't really have any domain there. It's just like if a show wants to show what it can, but it doesn't because it doesn't want to piss off advertisers.
Really?
Yeah. Now, people who are listening who know more about this than I do, I'd love for you to write in and to see, like, because I read about that, and that's what a couple people and sites were saying. So I'd love somebody who knows more than me to write in and say, because, like, that would explain a lot of FX, essentially.
Yeah, for real.
That explains the whole network, actually.
Yeah,
because like if you look at Comedy Central, I mean, there's like on South Park, you can say shit, but then on another show, they bleep it, you know, so.
Yeah.
That's so
interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, and so I'd love some sort of verification.
Yeah, that would be great. Go to the forums and tell us about this if you know something, or email us. It's either trek.fm/forums.
So do you guys like the TNG Borg cubes better, or the First Contact Voyager Borg cube better?
I've gotten used to the later, more modern Borg cubes, so I'm more in line with the Voyager and First Contact version. What about you, Lori?
I don't think I ever noticed a difference, to be honest.
Oh, jeez.
They're cubes, and they're shooting cubes. Stuff, and yeah.
I would say that this version is a little greener.
Yeah.
And not as much duct tape look to it.
There's one thing that I see. Okay, these shots right here is totally reminiscent of like the trench run in Star Wars, which is awesome.
Definitely.
I love that we got some of these shots in Voyager and in later Deep Space Nine, where we got to see like the skimming of the Borg cube, or, you know, like angles that you wouldn't be able to do with models unless you had like 3 months.
Right. Yeah. Thank goodness for CGI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, oh gosh, when did... Oh, I'm trying to think of when CGI really became full-time incorporated into Voyager. Do you guys know?
Wasn't it like season 3 or something? Because they had CGI all throughout.
Right, but I mean full-time.
Didn't they use, like, when they brought on Species 8472, it was, like, around that time? Or was it
before? That's what I thought, too, like, season 3.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking, too. So, okay, we're going to say end of season 3, start of season 4?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we'll look that up.
Oh, and of course, it was just a dream.
Yeah, I love the floaty, glowy dream sequence.
Yeah, they are cool. Of course, that's reminiscent of First Contact, where that party got started, I think.
That party, yeah.
When the since we were talking about the difference in Borg cubes earlier, it was there was an episode of Enterprise that was a Borg episode, and I actually do really like that episode. And when I read that it was going to happen, like when it was actually airing, I thought, oh, okay, what are they going to do? You know, like, are they going to do the like the TNG Borg, or are they going to do the First Contact Borg? And they ended up doing the First Contact Borg because they were, you know, they were the time traveling Borgs from First Contact.
Right,
so I was
like,
oh, that would have been cool to see, like, that kind of a makeup job.
It would have. I remember my first reaction when I heard about that episode was, oh, really? The Borg? You can't think of anything better? After all that they did on Voyager, you're going to resort to the Borg? How are you going to do this? But then you know what? I ended up liking the episode for the most part. It was pretty well done.
Yeah. The fact that they tied it all together, I like that. It was pretty good storytelling.
Dare I say it, and I do know that I'm on a Voyager podcast, I like that episode better than I do some Voyager Borg episodes. Like this one.
Well, their average is definitely better.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is, okay, and I'm just going to say this up front. I am not a huge, huge fan of the Boar Kids, primarily because I don't feel like they ever knew what to do with them.
No, not really.
Save for Icheb.
Yeah.
They gave him something to do, at least. He hung out with Naomi a little bit. That was about it. But then the rest of them, who cares?
And that was kind of weird to me. That was a little awkward. He was so much older than she was. It just seems strange to me. That's not natural
true.
Children behavior at all. So,
well, for humans, certainly not. I mean, you're not going to have a 17-year-old playing with,
let's say, a four-year-old.
Naomi. Like,
yeah.
Well, I'd
what
say
what about
Naomi
a 40-year-old
has...
and a 2-year-old? I mean, that was pretty natural on Voyager.
You had to go there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Nice.
I guess age doesn't matter the way it does in the future as it does now.
Okay, sure.
Now, I think with this Borg cube, I think this one, the reason why this one looks a little bit different is because it's a tactical cube. It has
maybe.
No, it's not. I thought it was, but it just now popped up on the screen. It's not. I think we saw the tactical cubes in Endgame, I think, and they just had more shielding on them, like more metallic squares or something. I always wondered that, like, why didn't they send those all the time? Like, whenever they tried to invade Earth, like, why didn't they just send the tactical cubes?
You know, yeah. It's
and also,
strange.
Why just one cube?
Well, that's the big question about the Borg, right? I mean, when they first started out, when we saw them on TNG, all it took was one Borg cube,
there,
right?
Yeah, for real. That's all it took. That's all it
was. It fires one torpedo and a starship is destroyed. But then we have this episode where a shuttle can fight a Borg cube. Now, granted, it's being run by children and only five of them at that. But still, this is the Borg we're talking about. And I completely understand why people kind of like to rag on Voyager for neutering the Borg and taking away their threat.
Yeah. But what else can you do when you use them that long and that much?
That's just it. Yeah. Should they have used them so much? I mean, of course we were going to encounter them because Voyager is in the Delta Quadrant. But I really do think that they went to the well a few too many times.
Yeah, you could have totally left this one out and never have seen these kids, and I think nobody would have shed a tear. Cried, did anything.
I agree.
I mean, this was not
Nobody
necessary.
Would have cared.
It would have made me appreciate future episodes a little bit more with the kids gone. So
yeah. I kind of wonder why. Why did they feel like they had to inject kids into this? I don't know.
I think it was another way to explore Seven's humanity a little bit more.
Make her a mom. Her, oh, okay.
Yeah, like instead of having the maternal guide being Janeway, she's now the maternal guide for somebody else going through the same thing she's going through.
I always felt like Seven was just this glorified babysitter to them.
She was so impatient. That made me laugh so hard because I think, geez, lady, you'd never make it with five kids. You can't deal with five kids. Come on.
Sure, but she's still getting herself together. Much less.
I can't deal with five kids.
Oh, I sure can't. No. I lock him in a closet. I
she
am not
should have locked
him.
I wouldn't really admit that. She essentially did with the what bay she was in. I can't remember.
Cargo bay. Yes.
Cargo
Stay
bay,
here.
Yeah,
don't leave. Don't tell anybody I left you here either. It's
okay,
our secret.
We get to see the maturation chamber. Now, is this before or after one? Or whatever that was
this
called.
This is after Drone. One.
This is after one. Okay, so we've seen a Borg infant before.
Yes, but I don't know. This is really, the whole concept of the maturation chamber really does interest me. Like, the Borg will essentially just keep their kids in stasis until they're, what, 18? Suddenly they're Borg operating age?
Yes.
So this is a baby they assimilated, and they're just making it grow up? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, it's in like a Borg womb or incubation chamber, whatever.
No Borg had a baby, is what you're saying.
Right, no. The Borg does not.
They don't
procreate
like that. They have to assimilate.
Because that I just thought was strange. Like, okay, so one of the people they assimilated was pregnant? Or, okay, that makes sense.
They just had like the infant there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always like these outfits because it always makes me think of, like, the Borg are going to the beach.
They are showing a lot of skin, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yet another Photoshop project, Borg at the beach. That'd be fantastic.
I did like that they kept the concept of maturation changers, because those were established in the first episode that we saw of the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just nowhere near as high tech, for obvious reasons, because, you know, it's the 80s.
Yeah.
But, like, it was just like a drawer that Riker would open.
That's what it was.
And he's like, oh, look.
It was a drawer.
There's a baby.
There's a kid in there.
But the concept was the same, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. They refined it. That's all they did.
That's all they did.
Now, okay, Tristan, we know that you don't like Ichab.
No, I don't.
Why don't you like Ichab?
Okay, so many people give me crap for that online, because Manu, or how you say his name, is actually on Twitter, and apparently he's a nice guy. I've never had any interactions with him. That's fine. He's a nice guy. I'm not saying he's not a nice guy. Like, whenever I judge a character, it's never, well, it's normally never a judgment on the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the actor did fine. Manu did fine portraying Ichab. It's just, I thought Ichab was whiny and annoying, and I felt like they just didn't know what to do with his character. And the only episode I actually appreciated Ichab in was when we got to meet his parents, and we find out that he was used as a weapon. Now that's cool. That's a great idea.
That's true. Yes.
And it's just, I just, ugh.
Okay.
He just grates on me. I think he's a pointless character. And there's only two moments where I thought he was interesting. Actually, there was one episode where I thought he was interesting, and that's the one we just mentioned. And then there was another episode where I thought he was meaningful, and that's when he gave his one of his Borg implants to Seven.
Okay, yeah.
Because the Binculum was making her go crazy or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
I thought that was great, and I thought that was a very touching moment between the two of them. But it was not enough to justify the character for as long as he was on.
Yeah. I think you're right that they didn't know what to do with him. They didn't know what to do with these kids. And I feel like if you're going to bring them on board long term on the show, because this is actually an instance where there's not a reset button.
Yeah.
You ought to have some kind of idea what you want to do with them. Otherwise, it's just a waste.
Also, we never talk about the infant again, I don't think.
I wanted to bring that up. We never see the Borg baby ever again. What happens to it? Does a crew member decide to take care of it? We never find out.
It's like the daughter in Family Members, Family Matters. She goes upstairs and never comes back
down. Yeah. It's just one of those mysteries, and not even the novels, I don't think, have solved it.
I knew you were going to bring that up. Like, I have scoured of the novels and every single fan fiction online, and it is not discussed.
Oh, I'm sure it's discussed in fan fiction, but I've never read one. Yeah. But Kirstein Beyer, if for whatever off chance you're listening to this commentary, I'm just saying there's a loose end out here that you could tie up. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
But you don't need to, from this podcaster's perspective.
Oh, come on. Just a blip. A two-line... One-sentence paragraph.
As long as it's a two-line blip.
That's all I'm asking.
I always felt the Starfleet uniforms look so naked without the comm badge.
They do. They're incomplete without it. Then they just look like pajamas.
I would sleep in those pajamas if I had those.
Oh, I would too. Absolutely. Yeah, they're good-looking pajamas.
A little
warm.
But
you know what imprinted that in my mind? Was in the DS9 episode Past Tense, where they go back to the 21st century and it's before the Bell riots, and somebody takes their comm badges, and the sanctuary security guy, he said, look, you have no ID, you don't even know where you are, and you're dressed in your pajamas, to Sisko and Bashir. And so that solidified it for me. And I think a lot of other fans, because a lot of people say that these uniforms look like glorified pajamas.
If they had feet in the bottom, definitely.
Well, they do have stirrups.
Well, there you are.
See, I always... Okay, when we saw these introduced in Deep Space Nine, I always thought it made sense because you normally saw them with the sleeves rolled up, like with O'Brien.
Right.
And you had, like, with, you know, Next Generation going on, and even they had the TNG uniforms for people on ships, and they had these uniforms for people on stations and work crews and things like that. And I liked that separation. I thought it was cool. Like, okay, so if you serve on a starship, you're going to wear this. And if you serve on a station or an outpost or something, you're going to wear this because you're probably going to get your hands dirtier more often. And I like that. And then for some reason in Generations, we had that weird transition between the two uniforms. And then it felt like, oh, half of you in pajamas and half aren't.
That was weird.
Yeah. I understand that these uniforms were more comfortable for the cast to wear. They were more flexible. But it did seem odd in Generations. They had that weird transition period between the old uniforms and these uniforms. There was no real good explanation why. And then, of course, they chuck them and design all new uniforms for First Contact, which I would argue are the best uniforms.
Yes, I would argue that too. Those are by far my favorite uniforms.
I love them.
All of Star Trek.
They look so put together and elegant. They kind of have a more, what do I want to say, official kind of feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say they have a military feel, but they just feel like if you're going to be a part of an organization, you got to have a kind of like sleek look.
And I love the variations that come with them. Like you have the jacket, you have the vest, you know, all of that business.
Yeah, Picard rocked that vest. I loved it.
Oh, and also, whoever argues with me about the about having the TNG uniforms on starships and the Deep Space Nine uniforms on space stations or outposts, watch Deep Space Nine episode Paradise 215, because you know Sisko has his pajamas on when he's on the station, but then when he gets to Starfleet headquarters and he knows he's going to stay there a while, guess what uniform he's wearing? It's
dun,
the
dun,
TNG
dun.
Style. Yeah.
So that.
Everyone shut up, because I used to get so much crap about that.
That's canon. You can't argue with that.
Now, this is a great shot. I love that shot.
It was beautiful.
Any time we get to see the interior in a wide angle of the Borg cube, I get excited.
It just shows how vast and humongoid giant these things really are.
Yeah.
I mean, infinite decks.
One thing I'd love to see is a Borg cube next to a Dyson sphere. I'd love to see the difference in size.
That would be sweet. Maybe Michael Okuda can get on that for us. He mentioned today on Twitter that the episode Relics for TNG and HD for the Blu-rays is going to look freaking amazing.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I didn't even think about that. My nerd head is exploding.
Mine too. This morning when I read that, I was just so excited. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's going to be so cool.
I love that they're pumping him out faster. And this episode, even though, you know, it's fair to Midland and, you know, forgettable, this episode would look great in HD because of all of those special effect shots of, like, inside and outside the Borg cube.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would watch this episode again just for that.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yes. Now, I have a lot of bones to pick about the story, though. I don't know about you guys. I feel like even though these are adolescent and children Borg, I don't feel like it's a good Borg story.
Yeah.
I feel like even a Borg who's been in a maturation chamber or whatnot has much more discipline than what these kids have. They're much more Borg than what we see here. They wouldn't say I, for instance.
But the thing is, this is our only frame of reference. You know?
So they're creating it, and I feel like they did it wrong.
Okay, I got you. Okay, I got you now. I got you.
You are doing
You would have
it wrong.
Liked to have seen a little bit more Borg in these adolescent Borg.
I don't feel like they are Borg enough.
They act
that
too
makes
much like
sense.
Kids. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, they're adolescents. I get it. Maybe they're in the rebellion I phase or something instead of we. I don't know. It just doesn't fully compute in my head. And I feel like it's a major failing in this story.
I feel like we never get to see B'Elanna at her engineering station anymore in later seasons. Like,
yeah.
I know that Harry's gone, and so, you know, she's taking over the operations station.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, aren't there people whose job is to take over for Harry when he's not there?
And, well, you would think, right?
And shouldn't B'Elanna be at her engineering station? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, she should be engineering, not calming. You're right. Or operationing. Yeah. You're right.
Operationing.
Operationing. I have this feeling like she's got the operation board game on the console. She's taking like a pair of engineering tweezers or something and oh, I missed.
Nah, the doctor's doing that in sickbay.
Oh, okay, right. But the thing is, he's a hologram and he's got that precise computer steady hand and he always wins. That's no fun.
No, he's no fun to play with.
Yeah.
Now I forgot, why does Harry have those sores on his face? Did he get space herpes again?
Maybe he's having an outbreak.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I think he got them actually because the console exploded in his face.
It's so acne. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Garrett Wong had a little bit of a problem. He needs some proactive.
I want to count how many times we see Seven's face in green light.
One.
Like, in this episode alone or all together?
No, like, all throughout the series, I'd say, like, oh my gosh. She's a Borg, but she has to be the person who is lit in green light more than anybody else.
Yeah, I would agree. It would be hundreds of times. And granted, she looks great. She looks wonderful in green, especially with the gold reflecting on her hair in the back right there.
Yeah.
That's nice lighting. I like it.
She's talking about her parents, and that always bugged the crap out of me. And I love that the doctor talked about it with somebody else later, like... someone called them trailblazers, and doctor's like, irresponsible, more like it. They took their kid to investigate the Borg.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it was not exactly the best profession with take your daughter to work day.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
But neither is Starfleet in general, if you think about it, and then you look at the Enterprise
D. It's true. Well, yeah, one of our writers, Philip Gilfus, wrote a great article for Trek FM on whether or not it was a good idea to have children aboard the Enterprise D. And mm-hmm. I think his essential conclusion is no, it's a death trap for them.
Death trap.
Yeah. I can see it from both ways because, you know, from the idealistic point of view, no, they're not the military. It's not a warship. It's a ship of exploration, and we've made it as comfortable as possible. So why wouldn't you take your families? But for the sake of television, it has to be a battleship to keep it interesting on screen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a proper mix of a philosophy and action, of course, because, you know,
yeah.
Abrams haters don't write me letters. but, like, it's true because that's where the drama comes from. It's from conflict and, oh my God, they're going to die. Mm-hmm. And
we got to make the ship shake at least once.
Exactly.
Every episode.
And, yeah. I did like the episodes that they had with kids where one guy was like, I hit a button and the whole ship shook.
My
fault. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did do some pretty decent things. And I see both sides too. I think if I were a Starfleet parent, I think I would be comforted by the fact that I would be able to raise my family on board the ship where I was serving for probably years at a time. Could you imagine being away that long?
No, that would be terrible.
It would be like taking your kid, if you were in the military, like to Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria. Mm-hmm. Would you really want to do that? Now, granted, okay, space is not always a war zone, but you are always at the risk of being in danger. So it's not quite the same thing, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, I'd feel like I kind of feel like it would be the sense of being a colony. Like you're going out and you're going to be the first humans on a colony. It's going to be dangerous, and a lot of people are probably going to die. And you're gonna get some troubles along the way. But the thing is, when you go out to colonize something, you take your family, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. because it's going to take a long time to get there. And that was the thing with Voyager. They didn't really have that issue because they're like, yeah, this is our first voyage. We're too small to hold families, and we're not going to be gone that long. And then all of a sudden, they're gone for the longest.
Yeah. It was supposed to be 3 weeks. Turned out seven years. No
seven
big deal.
Years, whatever.
Small, small differential.
Wait, everybody quiet. Seven is talking about her individuality.
Yeah, really. I know they tried to do this from so many angles, and granted, some of them are very good, but God, this is getting old.
Talk about going to the well.
Cocked to the side.
So many times, yes.
Yeah, and it's always between Janeway and Seven.
Yeah.
Because Janeway is Mama.
I heard some really disturbing things in an interview with Jerry Ryan.
About I think I know what you're talking about.
About the relationship between Jerry Ryan and Kate Mulgrew. And it, I wish I didn't know this, because she never said Kate Mulgrew's name ever. But the thing is, anybody who's ever watched the show knows that she's talking about Kate Mulgrew. Uh-huh. Apparently, Kate Mulgrew was the most unprofessional person ever in regards to acting with Jerry Ryan.
Which... counter, like, it goes against everything else that everybody else says about Kate Mulgrew. Like, she's a consummate professional and she mm-hmm. is an amazing person to work with, but there was definitely that friction between those two, I think, because of the character Jerry Ryan was playing,
right,
among other issues. And yeah, behind the scenes, it does not sound like a good relationship at all, which is unfortunate. And I know the interview you're talking about. It's that podcast with Aisha Tyler, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so if listeners want to find it, just look that up on iTunes and you'll be able to find the interview with Jerry Ryan. And yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but it did kind of change my opinion of Kate Mulgrew a little bit. And granted, I love her.
Oh, yeah, I love Kate Mulgrew too. And nothing is going to impact how I feel about her acting. Or, because I don't know her personally, it doesn't matter to me, you know?
Same here. I don't know her personally, and all I'm getting is secondhand knowledge. But I can't imagine Jerry Ryan is exaggerating or lying about this. Because I've heard it from other sources, too. But she is incredibly, well, not incredibly, but she is detailed about what happened. There's definitely some very relevant examples going on in that interview. And I just feel so bad for her that she had to go through that the whole time on the show.
The thing is that she said that she would wake up and she would have a stomach ache because she'd be so nervous because she would not want to go to work. Because she'd have to deal, like, if she had a scene with Kate Mulgrew, she would know that she would have to, like, just go through the ringer.
I mean, come on, how awful. Because they are on the set for a minimum of 12 hours every day, at least 5 days a week. That is a lot of time to be spending in your life feeling such dread.
And think about, like, name one other person who even comes close to sharing the same amount of screen time as Kate Mulgrew did with Jerry Ryan. Maybe the Doctor, but...
I'd say that's still a distant second.
Still a distant second. And it just sucks from some of the stuff that you hear. And, like, apparently you find out that Jerry Ryan was going to leave at the end of season 6 because that's when her contract was up.
Mm-hmm.
But then she found out that her mom had cancer and she's like, I should probably keep that steady paycheck coming just in case.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's sad to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. That interview changed my view on a lot of things, not just Kate Mulgrew, but Jerry Ryan as well. And I don't know. I actually gained a lot of respect for her.
Yeah.
For the way that she conducted herself, for the way that she hung in there.
And also in the interview itself, like, she mm-hmm. was, like, she was very respectful of everybody's feelings and names.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
but she wasn't out there to, I don't think she was really out there to air the dirty laundry, so to speak.
Yeah.
It just so happened to come up, and she was as graceful about it as she could be.
Yeah. Okay, so this is, I love this prop, even though it doesn't look real. I don't care. Because you can't put this many implants on a baby. You just can't. It's against the law. And
yeah.
No, it's literally against the law.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you would know. You would know.
You can't assimilate a baby. Sorry.
Yes. Lori, that's what it says in the bylaws. It's just you cannot assimilate a baby. And I thought this was really good. But you can totally see Jerry's finger, like, pushing the... his arm, so that it moves.
Oh yeah, you can. Right, I see there. That.
That's so funny. Great. I didn't notice that before, Tristan. Mm-mm. That's great.
Yeah. She should. She could go to work for the Muppets. She's pretty good.
She could. Maybe she got tips from Gates McFadden.
Here you go.
Who did work with the Muppets?
She made the Muppets dance.
Yeah. She did interpretive dance at Vegas. With,
okay, I thought that Voyager had oh there's that prop that's in, like, in every single episode of Star Trek. Oh, where'd it go?
What?
It's they use it as a field generator. They used it as an artificial intelligence robot.
Oh, from Think Tank. That is that thing.
Oh,
it's that thing from Think Tank.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think I ever noticed that. That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Like, once you see it, you'll never unsee it. Like, it's in every episode. Just like those three plasma tubes that's in every single science-y station.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. You left these.
I did always think that Voyager had the best away team gear. I thought they had the best kind of wrist lights, the backpacks.
They came prepared.
Yeah, I liked all that business.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And the as you watch the show, you'll see the technology slowly progress over the years, like because they had all of TNG and Deep Space Nine phasers and lights and everything like that, and rifles. But then once First Contact came out, things started slowly turning into First Contact phasers and rifles. And
they somehow upgraded as the time went by.
Yeah. And so in my mind, I retcon it by saying, oh, Starfleet just sent them the specs. And then they made them.
Yeah.
Like, here's the new stuff we're working with.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Who's to say that in season four, when they started getting messages and stuff, that they didn't tell them, hey, look, new specs. Although they didn't upgrade the uniforms, so.
That's true. That's the argument. That's the argument against it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that cost too many replicator rations or something.
Absolutely. That's the excuse.
Yeah, Borg, baby. We hardly knew ye.
We hardly knew ye.
And we'll never see you again.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know what in the world happened to you. Just, yeah, put it on some crewman's doorstep to the quarters or something. I don't know.
I always thought this was... I'm always surprised at what Doctor does and what he doesn't, because there are, like, he created a virus to kill people. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think he personally would even say, like, yeah, no, I'll do that for you as long as you promise you won't actually use it.
Why would he do it?
Be like, no. Yeah.
Nope, not gonna do it.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange dichotomy because, I mean, Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. Well, creating a serum that's going to kill people is doing harm.
Yeah.
But it's also leverage, and so you're walking a fine line.
Hmm. Oh, man, Harry's space herpes is really having a breakout right now.
Ooh, it's getting bad. Look at that.
I always thought that makeup job was amazing. Like, I love it when makeup artists can make something look like it's underneath the skin.
That is cool.
Yeah.
It really is amazing. I admire the work that they do, just because, first off, I don't know how they do it. And therefore, it's a mystery to me. And anything that you don't understand is magic. It's cool. But then they do such an incredible job. I mean, it's not just makeup. It looks real.
So this is like the first time ever that we've seen a Borg on the screen, except for Locutus.
Really?
Like on the view screen, I think so.
Whoa.
Because every other time that the Borg would talk with another ship, it would just be the void, like the center of the cube, the guts of it.
The chorus of voices.
Yeah, right.
Seven of Nine never appeared on screen, did she?
I don't think so.
A Scorpion 2? Okay. For some reason, that popped into my mind. Wow. Good observation.
Thank you. This is my favorite hairstyle of B'Elanna, personally.
The curly hair?
Oh, yeah, the crimped. That's right. You like the crimped hair.
Yeah, I do like the crimped hair.
It looks good on her. It's a little more Klingon, even, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My stand-up, however, sadly, is from the season one bob that she had. So.
Which is actually my least favorite of her hairstyles. I liked it when she grew it out just a little bit more toward her shoulders. But I think I like straight hair a little better on her.
I'm jealous of Garrett Wong here. Like, he gets to act just by taking a rest.
Sitting. Yeah.
Taking a nap and getting paid for it. That is the way to go, man.
Every once in a while, when I get angry at Icheb just for being Icheb, I try to remind myself that it could be worse, because Icheb could have died and this guy could have taken over.
Yes. Oh, yeah, okay. I know you don't like Icheb, but I really dislike this guy so much worse. It makes me grateful for Icheb. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the reverse of what happened with Ben Affleck becoming Batman. Like, I was so angry that everyone kept saying, oh, no, Ryan Gosling should totally be Batman. Ryan Gosling should totally be Batman. He was on every single list that every single magazine came out with future prospects. And I was just like, no, that's stupid. Ryan Gosling is not Batman. There's no way he could be Batman. And then they say Ben Affleck's going to be Batman. I was like, Ryan, I'm sorry for everything I said.
Yeah. So you're not a big fan of Batfleck?
No, not at all.
I'm not nearly the connoisseur of Batman films that you are, and I really honestly don't give a rat's.
Hey, I feel good. I'm glad that you don't care, because then you wouldn't lay awake at night like I do, sweating.
But,
no,
well, you're
it's
like laying in
bad.
Bed, you wake up from a bad dream, you're in a cold sweat. Bad flick.
Yeah, like I just have these nightmares where Batman like holds a bad guy over a rooftop and goes, "I'm gonna beat you up wicked hard."
Oh, oh God.
My. I'm really sorry you're going through that. I mean,
yeah.
You know that there is help out there.
Yeah.
You don't have to live with this, dude.
Yeah, the internet is no place for giving me help, but whatever. But back to
I'm
Voyager.
Not talking about the internet. Professional people out there can help you, bud.
This scene lasts like 10 minutes of just her standing in the maturation chamber talking back and forth to the children.
It's a lot of just blah, 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 back and forth. Let's replay this scene slightly differently over and over.
Oh, know. The twins. I completely forgot about the twins.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they have all but, what, three lines in this whole episode?
Oh, even in the entire series.
That's true, and they get them all in here.
Yeah, they were the first to get. They were the first to dump, too, was the twins.
They're useless.
Yeah.
Again, I really think they should have come up with some sort of use for these kids. I mean, the girl, she seems pretty bright. They could have done something with her. She could have been Naomi's friend. But no, we really don't see anything go on with her.
I would have rather if they forced the kids on us, which, you know, they did. I mean, but like if I was a writer and they said, okay, you got to have bored kids. I'm like, oh, fine. I would ditch the twins and the girl like in the next episode. I could say like, hey, we found your planet. And then Icheb is like, okay, I'm going to stay. Like, I wanted that episode to happen right away.
Oh, no, that would have been a little too cheap. I mean, give him a few episodes.
I just can't stand these kids.
Here's the thing, though. We could have ignored him for a few episodes and then found their home planet and drop him off, and so be it. That's their arc. That's all we need.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, but you're talking about just one episode later doing it.
Oh, no, like the next episode that we talk about them. Sorry.
Okay. I thought you meant, like, right after this episode, we're going to dump him off.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would have been just enough continuity to make me happy, and I think everybody would have not felt one bit bad about losing these kids. Because this is not the type, like, when people talk about they want children on Voyager, this is not what they're talking about. This is not how we want them here.
Yeah, we want natural-born children like Naomi
Wildman.
Right,
exactly. We want to see Joe Carey getting together with one of the Delaney sisters and making a love connection and having a love baby. And be Voyager the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be an interesting spinoff, like if they never went home, if they never got home. Voyager, like Star Trek Voyager, the next generation.
Yeah. In the Abramsverse, Voyager never gets home. And so 50 years later, an elderly Janeway is still trying to command the ship, but like somebody's granddaughter is just shut up, old woman, we're getting there.
You're joking, but that's actually a pretty interesting concept.
Hey, I wouldn't mind seeing that on screen.
Yeah, like, oh, man, yeah. In the Abramsverse, Voyager never gets home. Yeah,
sure.
That's interesting.
If they ever do anything more with the Abramsverse beyond the three movies that they're going to do, I would say that would be a pretty decent step, a decent place to take it.
The I guess we did have an episode of Enterprise that kind of dealt with that, about people who are out in the verse for like 100 years, and it became a generational ship.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was interesting there. And now we're back on Voyager.
Yeah, and all is safe and sound. La, 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 la.
Whenever they talk about implants, I giggle a little.
Yeah, the Borg kids, of all things, have implants. I guess you could say for the Borg, they like their silicon. Interpret that however you will.
Yeah. So, okay. I don't remember her wearing a full blue outfit like that. I remember like a silver and blue one, but I never remember a full-blown blue one.
Not very often, I would say, because she wears the other one you just mentioned much more often.
Yeah, that burgundy one.
And now I'm kind of wondering, okay, how many outfits did she have? How many leotards did Seven of Nine wear?
Yeah.
Well, she had like the silver one, mm-hmm. the burgundy one, that brown one, mm-hmm. the blue and white one, or the blue and silver one, and then I guess this blue one. So that's about five.
That's five right there.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, blue looks good on her.
Oh, I love future civilian clothes. It's never like, it's either, it's one extreme or the other. It's either like one complete leotard that's one color and shows mm-hmm. off, you know, like all your bits, and
yeah,
then you have something that is just a crazy amount of color, like Jake Sisko's vests or something, yeah. like some sort of
or Neelix,
yeah,
right. Fashion in the 24th century is a little odd. I don't know if I would appreciate it that much. I mean, like, one too many donuts, and if you're wearing the jumpsuit, everybody's going to see that bulge, man.
That's
much
why
less
everybody's
any others.
Really happy when the first contact, I don't know why I said Final Cut, why the First Contact outfits came out, because it hid some people muffin topping a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, as you age, it just sort of starts to happen. Things creep up on you. Except
no
for
judgment.
Patrick Stewart, because that dude is still in amazing shape, man. I want his workout regimen.
Eternal youth, absolutely.
My God, the dude does not age.
I saw a graphic the other day. It said something like, once you reach top level, you stop leveling up or something like that. Or like uh-huh. once you reach max XP, you stop leveling up. And it was just a picture of him in the 80s and him today. And it looks exactly the same.
It really does. His face does not look that different at all. And all that's right. The episode.
Next up, Spirit Folk.
Oh, God.
And Tristan's happy. And that's it. Nobody else.
Oh,
collective
Lord.
Groan otherwise.
Yes.
All right. Well, that was collective.
Yes,
that
it was.
Collective. So that is our commentary. Yay. All right. Well, as fun as this has been, guys, this isn't the only thing that's been happening this week on the network, on Trek FM. As you know, we have tons of shows, new Trek coming to you every week. And here's a little glimpse of what you might have not captured if you're not listening to other podcasts on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Aliens of Deep Space Nine.
That's a really good question. I honestly never even thought to question the Vorta's idea of their own existence and whether or not it was, you know, just a story.
The Ready Room.
A matter of honor.
Riker is the perfect person to go on this exchange because he has that confidence to go toe-to-toe with a Klingon to make his presence known and to get that authority right away.
To the journey!
The Malon.
I just loved how how immediately when the Malon came on, the main guy came on the view screen, he's like, I use 6 spatial charges. I expect to be compensated. Like, it wasn't even like, hey, you okay? Commentary, Trek stars.
Ronald D. Moore.
I'm saying that I don't know who the Ringo of Deep Space Nine is. But it wasn't Ron Moore, because Ron Moore has got to be the Paul McCartney.
Warp 5.
The Sphere Builders.
And it is a good concept. I think and obviously the reasons it was introduced were more because of the studio and wanting that looking forward perspective, you know, getting ahead of the 24th century.
Trek News and Views.
Darmok.
I've just bought a book and I say, what on? You know, which mean, what on? A Kindle or... No, I went to a bookshop. Went to a bookshop?
Literary Treks.
Assignment Earth Comics.
I kind of liked it in that it picks up from Assignment Earth, the Star Trek episode, where we find out that Gary Seven has been sent there to find out why the two agents who were supposed to be stopping that missile launch can't do it. What happened to them?
And introducing our new next generation show, Earl Grey.
My garage turned into a holodeck with some crepe paper and a nice grid pattern. I just could not get enough of it. That was Halloween. That was everything. And my parents very indulgingly gave me many Playmates toys because those things were awesome.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check all of that out. Don't miss any of it. It's all fantastic. If you love our show, you're going to love anything else on Trek FM. It's all good. So, before we go, So if you haven't already, please give us an iTunes review. We love hearing about those. We love giving you a shout out on the show. And visit our sponsor, trekfan.org. You're going to explore some crazy stuff if you can get beyond that first puzzle that you see when you first load up the website. You have the chance to win prizes even. So if you haven't checked that out yet, do that. Next week, we're going to go back to one of my favorite things, and I think it's, well, I think we all love it. We love our lists on To the Journey. We're going to do a top three list, as we tend to do, of the funniest moments of Voyager. I can't wait for this because I like a good laugh. I think everybody likes a good laugh, and we're going to talk about funny stuff, so we're going to laugh. Yay! So that should be a lot of fun. That's what's going to happen next week. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!